Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And may I be among the first to wish you a happy National Tongue Twisters Day.
Oh, glad to know that that's the case.
Yeah. We've got important things to do in America. One of them is to salute the tongue twister.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
If Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, where the peck did the pickled peppers Peter Piper's pick?
Be careful.
I know.
Be careful.
I know.
Charlie Romeliotis.
We need more difficult names to pronounce on WGN. Romeliotis?
Romeliotis.
That sounds pretty Greek
to me. He's very Greek, yes.
Oh, yeah. Has he brought any lamb in yet?
I've not seen any lamb as of yet.
He and I will be roasting a lamb out in front of the building for the holidays.
Do it at the United Center.
What do you mean?
Well, for a Blackhawks celebration.
To roast a lamb?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, he has to be there for that, doesn't he?
Sure. But, you know, that'd be appropriate. He does the pregame for the Blackhawks. Why not do it there?
Schwani, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck would chuck wood? He would chuck, he would, as much as he could, and chuck as much wood. You know, there's just as many words in that tongue twister that could get us to lose our license as first one.
Try it. Yeah, toy boat.
Sally sells seashells
by the seashore.
She sells seashells by the seashore.
Sally, I like to call her by her first name.
Okay, Sally.
Sally sells seashells. Why is that so difficult?
Because of the S and the SH combination.
Sally sells seashells by the seashore.
You know, that's a bit on an Andy Griffith episode.
I got to get my dentures adjusted.
It was also a bit in the Brady Bunch when Cindy was being teased by Buddy Hinton. Because of her lisp.
How can a clam cram in a clean cream can?
Now, that one I don't know.
I've never heard
that. Have you heard that one, Andy?
I have not.
I saw Susie sitting in a shoe shine shop.
Watch it.
These are all filthy. Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear.
Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair.
Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't Fuzzy Wuzzy. That's the entertainment portion of our program for today.
And maybe some of our listeners have some tongue twisters.
Do you know what? These tongue twisters, I was curious who proclaimed it National Tongue Twisters Day. But this goes back like 100 years. Doctors interested in perfecting people's pronunciation developed these tongue twisters as exercises.
Ah, that's how it came about. Yeah. Okay.
For our tongues.
She sells seashells by the seashore.
When's the last time you exercised your tongue?
Well, we talk for a living, so there is some tongue exercise going on there.
Right? I got a date at 7:45. I'll see you at the gate, so don't be late.
Well, that's more of a rhyming thing.
That's more of a rhyming thing.
Yeah.
I'm just reading from a list of...
You have a whole list of them in front of you there?
Yeah, I got 100 of them.
Wow.
We only have a two-hour show today, so...
I know.
Get ready.
Any others jump out at you that we can read on the air?
Let me see. We did the good ones. Betty bought her butt some...
Hello.
Betty Botter bought some butter, but she said the butter's bitter. If I put it in my batter, it'll make my batter bitter. But a bit of better butter will make my batter better. So 'twas Betty Botter who bought a bit of better butter.
Wow.
That was impressive.
I'm stunned.
Yeah.
I'm stunned.
I'm stunned that we're talking about this on WGN. That's the part that gets me with this.
I'll think about bitter butter when I use butter in it, you know, at home.
I'd like to,
but I'll be better about it.
I like to meet Betty Botter, though, and her bitter butter.
Never bring us down.
Well, one of the signature songs from the musical Wicked, you may have seen on stage. Have either of you gone to see Wicked, the musical?
I have not.
Nope, haven't seen it.
It's an amazing, amazing musical. It's, you know, it's the it's the backstory of the Wizard of Oz story. It's how everything came to be with the witches and the wizard and all that. That's so, you know, you'll be able to relate to it in that way. One of the most successful musicals of all time, both on Broadway and around the world. And it's about to become it's about to be released as a major motion picture with Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo in the lead roles. And I was in Los Angeles this past week, and I saw the movie, and I interviewed the stars. Yes, I touched Ariana Grande.
Uh-oh. Did security swarm you?
I touched Cynthia Erivo. Cynthia Erivo shakes hands with me, and she goes, "You have beautiful eyes."
Wow. Oh.
I'm taking that as hitting on me. I'm forever now going to say that Cynthia Erivo is hitting on me. The movie's amazing, by the way. If you're a fan of Wicked, which clearly Andy and Chuan...
Huge fan.
Falling on super deaf ears. but if you've seen the musical, it is absolutely amazing and perfect for kids of all ages and families. It opens a week from Friday. I'll tell you much more about it. And if you would like to see the photograph that I took with Ariana Grande and my future ex-wife, Cynthia Erivo, it's posted on my social media right now. We're embracing.
So you had fun then, sounds like.
Yeah, I did have fun.
Good.
Yeah. I had fun watching the movie because I've seen the play, I'm going to say maybe a half a dozen times. Seen it.
Wow, you must really like
it. Well, I've seen it on Broadway, but when we've had productions here in Chicago, as the entertainment critic, I feel compelled to go so I can review it. I feel that's my responsibility.
It is. It is.
So I've seen many shows. There's one big show in particular. I won't mention the name of it, but there's one hugely popular show that I can't stand. That I have had.
Well,
to
we
go
all
see,
have them.
I've had to go see it like a dozen times.
Hmm.
So I mean to review it, but each time I go in, I keep thinking maybe this time I'll get it.
And every time you go in,
because everybody loves it. Everybody loves this musical.
Yeah,
and I leave going, I can't.
Don't like it.
Can't stand it.
Okay, now you've got me thinking as to which one it might be.
What it could be.
Yeah.
Meow. Meow.
Okay. All right. Meow. There was a good hint.
Meow.
Okay.
Meow.
Understood.
That could be a new character on this show.
Meow.
The Sunday morning kitty cat. How are you this morning, Sunday morning kitty cat?
Meow.
Meow.
Yeah, so anywho, Wicked is wickedly fantastic. I interviewed Ariana Grande and my future ex-wife, Cynthia Erivo. I interviewed, you know who's playing the wizard in this? Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, I saw that on the TV ad, yeah.
He is so good in the movie. But wait until you hear this interview that I did with him. He is so hilarious. I can't wait to play that for you. It'll be next week or the week after that we'll play that. But I interviewed the cast. We just had a great time out in L.A., and I'll keep you posted on all of that.
Okay.
So, 1 week ago at this time, our ears were bleeding with feedback from the microphones.
That's right.
Hey, what's our live remote without feedback?
A spectacular opening to last week's show.
Got everybody's attention.
We had our own sort of on-air fireworks display. There were a few settings that were off.
Just a couple.
The engineers profusely apologized. And hey, you know what? It's a live broadcast that happens. What are you going to do?
And we got it out of the way right at the start.
Yeah, we did it right in the beginning. Nobody's listening in the beginning of the show. They're like our producer, Jack. He doesn't pay attention until about 9:30.
after we get past this part of this segment of the show.
It's a shame because he would have known who Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are. The young man that he is. He missed something good this week.
But as usual, we had a full house when we started the show.
That's stunning to me.
It is.
I just have to thank our listeners.
I've said the best in the world.
When I pulled up, there was a line. I don't know how long it was. I'm not a good estimator, but it was.
It was back toward the toll road.
It's a much longer line than I would have stood in to see me.
It was back toward the toll road.
It was a really long line to get in. People got there early because they wanted to get a good seat. The place was packed. It was standing room only the entire
Really for the whole hours. Show, yeah.
Yeah. And we had just one great performer after another last week, I thought.
We did.
I know Shawnee didn't care for some of them.
Oh, now, what made you think that? I liked everybody who was there.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Thank you, everybody who, you know, all the performers. From White Christmas at the Marriott, from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which will be
that opening. Was great.
That was spectacular.
Yep, Million Dollar Quartet.
That was really good. Oh,
I'm going to see it. Going to go see it.
Wear your blue suede shoes.
I will. Yep. High heeled sneakers.
You wear high heels? Is there something you want to tell us?
No. Okay. I should have left that alone.
There's something we need to
know. I should have left it alone.
I thought I knew everything there was to know about you.
Should have left it alone.
High heels.
But you got me. First of all, I've never seen the show, and I've wanted to. But when you said that when you walk in and the lobby is recreated to look like Sun Records, I'm sold.
That's the thing. It's not like Sun Records is recreated on stage. The minute you walk in the front door of this theater, it's like you're walking into the reception area of Sun Records. And the whole experience when you're there is like when Elvis, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins performed that historic night at the famous Sun Studios in Memphis, Tennessee. That's what the show is. And these guys, you are literally 5 feet away from the performers for the show. It's an intimate theater. And these guys just do an amazing job. As you heard last week, they were great.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we had a nice time. Thank you to the folks at Tree Time.
Don't forget the boys from Illinois.
The boys from Illinois, Eddie Carosa
and friends.
And the great polka band, the Canterbury Carolers, always providing a lovely holiday touch when we're doing the show. That was nice. Thank you to Lori and Joe Kane, the owners of Tree Time, for their amazing hospitality every year. Lou Malnati's provided lunch for everybody. Who am I forgetting? I'm sure I'm forgetting everyone.
Anderson's Candies was there,
although I never got any.
That's you didn't
right.
get? You
I'm
didn't
not
get
offended.
Any?
No.
Okay.
Chwani took about 10 of them.
Well, you've never invited me to the commissary at WGN-TV, so I guess that... You know,
what does that have to do with Anderson's candy shop?
Food.
I don't understand. I've never invited you to WGN. Not at all.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah. Let's keep it that way. What else? Who else do I need to thank? Marlene Wells. From our promotion staff, who pretty much runs this whole thing.
Yeah, it was nice of her to bring me some pizza since I had to leave a little early.
Did she bring you pizza
Jack,
to go?
Yeah, Jack brought some pizza back for us.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So thanks, Marlene.
Very nice. And our technical staff, Bill Murdoch and
Dan Long,
and was it Krista back here at the station?
Yep.
Yes.
Pushing the buttons. Yeah. We had. Thank you, everybody, for a wonderful time. I would like to resolve something.
Okay.
When we did a segment where people could ask us anything, I think Andy, you had already
left. Yeah.
You're gone already. But people asked us, you know, what's it like? Was there an interview that was impactful? That we'll always remember. And each of us had a different answer. But Schwani said, I'm paraphrasing now, that James Lovell was the second most impactful interview that you ever did?
No, it was the first, actually. But I mentioned two. I mentioned that and a state senator named Barack Obama back in the 90s.
Oh, okay, because I've gotten an email from a person. He must have sent me like 10 emails this week. Asking, he's already sent three texts this morning. Besides James Lovell, who was the other man that impacted Schwani for his interview? I forgot you said Barack
Obama. Yeah, it was Barack Obama. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's settled. Please stop emailing me. You'll notice I haven't answered one of your emails. yeah, okay. So. Very nice, very nice time. What else? Anything else? Any old business?
Meeting adjourned. Any new business?
I'm good, yeah.
Okay.
No. All right.
Maybe more tongue twisters later on in the show.
The text line is filling up. You know, now that people can't text in about the election, they need to move on to other pressing issues in America. It's National Tongue Twister Day. And people are already texting in their tongue twisters. We'll get to those coming up in a little while. We've got Dr. Jack Silver, The Week in Medicine, coming up next. You probably think you should be hearing the far-flung forecast theme right
Well,
now.
I was anticipating it, yeah.
Computer froze up for just a moment.
Well, we've got it. That's part of the Sunday morning routine anyway.
Newfangled technology, computers.
Maybe we can do some can we recreate some feedback today? There it is.
Feedback is reserved only for our live broadcasts with studio on.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time once
again. Did you say gentlemen?
Yes, I did. It's time. Don't make me cough. It's time once again for our fabulous far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium. What? What are you trying
to make it into a tongue twister?
I am trying to, but I probably shouldn't do that with F words.
No, you shouldn't.
Here's Dave Schwan.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Dean. And get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices.
Can I just say how disappointed I was that not one person last week showed up with a compass, protractor,
newfangled device? I know. I was trying to find some, and I couldn't.
I thought it was going to be like audience participation during the far-flung.
Well, we've had people bring things in the past.
Yeah, we had people bring things, but I specifically asked for compasses,
no one did.
Protractors.
That's because these compasses, protractors, and are kind of obsolete, but the newfangled devices are in.
Yeah.
They're in fashion. So whatever device you're using, we head south today to Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh.
Birmingham, Alabama, quite popular, nearly populated, I should say, about 200,000 people. And the Birmingham metropolitan area has a population of well over 1 million. Now, Birmingham was founded in 1871. So this is after the Civil War. It was during the Reconstruction period. It was a merger of three pre-existing farm towns and has been so ever since. It's a very historic city for a number of reasons.
I like their accent there.
You like the accent?
I like the Alabamian accent.
Where they
accent.
Say Birmingham.
Birmingham. It's
Birmingham.
Yeah, it's like music. Listening to certain parts of the South speak.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
very mellifluous.
It's yeah. my cousin Vinny.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's exactly
that's
true.
That's where it was, yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I love to hear accents in that part of the country. But we mentioned Birmingham today. What's the matter?
On to the next.
We go to Birmingham today for a very special reason, really.
Oh, good.
Because they are the proud presenters and owners of what is the oldest Veterans Day parade in the United States.
Interesting.
It's tomorrow will be the 77th Veterans Day parade. Now, we've had Veterans Day, or what used to be called Armistice Day, as a holiday for a number of years, but this was the first parade of its kind in the United States in 1947. So tomorrow will be the 77th Veterans Day parade, and I thought it might be appropriate to mention this because Veterans Day is tomorrow, and we thank our veterans for their service.
I may celebrate by having a mint julep.
So in the fair city of Birmingham.
Some country time lemonade.
Swanee, would you care for a piece of southern comforter?
You know, he walks a lack of this.
This is the portion,
I knew that would get him.
The portion of the program where only Schwanee and I know what
you
we're
know
talking
Charlie,
about.
You know Charlie, don't you? He walks a lock of this.
Southern Comfort. It tastes more like Southern Comforter. These are all Three Stooges.
Well, the temperature in the city of Birmingham is, you know, they have a weather like this. 60, cloudy and... Cloudy and 68 in Birmingham. And I hope for tomorrow, they're going to have a beautiful day for the parade. Sunny and 75.
It's 9:40 and time for the Week in Health. Dr. Jack Silver joining us, the Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Good morning to you, Dr. Silver. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Ian, good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. Wanted to start off with something that I'm noticing with a lot of people, and then I looked it up and found that it is actually widespread. That is walking pneumonia. Can you explain the difference between pneumonia and walking pneumonia?
Sure. I mean, it's all bacteria or viruses that get into the lungs and cause infection. But, you know, when you drill down into the type of germs that cause these diseases, like pneumonia, they're a little bit different. And walking pneumonia doesn't tend to affect people in such a severe way as what you think of a typical bacterial pneumonia, where a piece of the lung gets filled up with pus. And some folks end up in the hospital and sick for a long time. But it is, you know, significant, and certainly it can cause you to miss work, or if you're a child, to miss school. But it's out there, and certainly, you know, like everything else that we talk about with illnesses, if you're really on the extremes of the age spectrum, less than 2 or older than 65, or you've got chronic medical conditions like COPD or heart failure, or you have a weakened immune system taking immune suppressant meds, or you have cancer, those folks are going to be more susceptible.
What are symptoms that you might have walking pneumonia?
Sure. So a lot of it overlaps with symptoms that you might ascribe to the common cold or the flu or COVID. So a sore throat, fatigue, certainly chest pain and cough, although not every person will have a cough. Many children will just present with a bellyache, and we can talk about that a little bit more if you'd like, but also headache and even sneezing, and certainly a low-grade fever.
Wow, so it's very much cold-like symptoms with that can be kind of misleading for people.
That's correct, yes. That's why it's really important if you're feeling run down and, you know, you've got more than a few symptoms that are concerning, particularly shortness of breath or you're coughing, a good idea to have that looked at.
Okay. What is the treatment? I know for pneumonia, they pump you up full of antibiotics. Is that also the case with walking pneumonia?
Absolutely. So if you are diagnosed with the quote-unquote walking pneumonia, there's some great medications out there that are safe for adults and for kids. And the good news is you can take them by mouth and they work very well. So that's, it's very treatable. And again, you're very unlikely to become seriously ill, but it's just important to catch it early on in the process.
Is this something that is contagious? If somebody has it, should family members, friends who are in close physical proximity be concerned?
Yeah, it is actually pretty darn contagious. And so, you know, like all the other respiratory diseases, whether it's COVID or flu or RSV, if you're coughing and you don't feel good, wear a mask when you're out in public, and you will hopefully prevent a few other folks from getting sick like you.
Actually, a texter on the subject from the 708 asks, how long are you contagious after completing antibiotics for pneumonia?
Oh, that is a great question. I think nobody knows the exact answer. But I think what I tell people when they come into the emergency department is a safe bet is that you've been greater than 24 hours after your last fever and you're no longer coughing or generating particles from your nose or mouth that are going out into the air.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good guideline to follow with this. Are you seeing people who are coming in are you seeing it more in the emergency room?
We are seeing a significant bump in this illness pattern. So it's definitely out there now, and it's definitely causing disease.
Yeah, and what's the latest on the taking of antibiotics? It used to be back in the day, you know, doctors were handing them out like candy. And now you can barely get your doctor to prescribe an antibiotic. What's the latest on all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a phase where any hospital that you go to work in as a physician, they're going to have an antibiotic stewardship program, and that's the buzzword amongst the medical personnel. But for the average Joe who doesn't know anything about medicine and just is curious, what's the deal? The deal is that we started to see significant antibiotic resistance 15 to 20 years ago, and became concerned that if we continue to throw out antibiotics in the settings of viruses, for instance, then all you're doing is you're helping the bacteria that aren't currently causing disease in your body mutate to the antibiotics, so they see it, they're just constantly generating new versions of themselves. They're constantly replicating in your body, and you're introducing an opportunity for them to replicate into a mutation. And then the next time you actually need that antibiotic for strep throat or strep pneumonia or whatever the case is, well, now you've got a bunch of germs that are well-tuned to fight off that drug, and it's no longer effective. Mm. And we're seeing that now, you know, because this plays out in healthcare settings across the world every day. And so the population of bugs out there in the world are getting stronger and stronger the more we use these drugs when we shouldn't be. So that's, you know, one big reason. And then another reason is simply that it can cause bad side effects. There's a diarrheal illness called C. difficile diarrhea. And not to get into the gross specifics of it, but it can be lethal. And it can impact people's lives forever, totally changing the way their gut works. And people have chronic diarrhea for life after developing this disease and other health issues. And so that is all tied to many antibiotics can cause that type of diarrhea. And I'm sure some of your listeners have even experienced that personally. So that's a second very significant reason to hold back on the antibiotics if you don't need to. And then lastly is allergic reactions. So with allergies, they're often tied to drugs, and they get more severe the more often you have them. And so if I'm going to have a rash, the first time I take a penicillin, and then the next time I take it, I'm going to have full-blown life-threatening anaphylaxis, well, I want to try and save it for when I really need it. And if I have a rash, well, then I take it off my list, but at least I've used it sparingly. So there's a lot of reasons, a lot of really good reasons why we don't, you know, like you say, throw it out like candy.
But are they developing new antibiotics the way they did with COVID vaccines, as the disease itself changed and morphed based on the way we were fighting it? New vaccines were developed. Are we not doing that with antibiotics?
You know, it's mind blowing to me why we haven't shifted into that preventative mode. Because we know that that the number of effective antibiotics is dwindling, and we're seeing more and more severe hospital based infections, funguses and bacteria and all manner of diseases. What we did with the vaccine for COVID was a generational approach to fighting back against the germs, and it will be, I think, the story of humankind, of how we adjust and adapt to the pathogens in our environment. Now, of course, that's, I'm biased. I'm a physician, and that's my world. But I truly believe that is the existential fight of humanity, is against the germs.
Yeah.
So, yes, it would 100,000% be in our best interest to be doing this. But it all comes down to the money and the insurance companies and the drug developers. And if people can't get paid to do the R&D, they're not going to do it.
Seems like,
so it, you know, it all comes down to finances.
Yeah, it seems like there would be a lot of money involved in creating something like that, just like the pharmaceutical money's made a boatload of money on all the different COVID vaccines. Let me take a break. When we come back, more questions, comments for Dr. Jeremy Silver. 312-981-7200 next on WGN. 9:54, back with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Director of Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. The American AHA has put out some new guidelines for stroke. Doctor, I wonder if you could kind of brush over that a little bit so we're all up to date on that.
Yeah, Dean, I'm pretty happy about this. I think the great part of these new recommendations, and they come out every few years, is a real emphasis on things that people can actually do something about, as opposed to genetics or other factors. And so what they've done is they've actually identified life's essential eight cardiovascular health metrics. So the eight things that that you and I can do to impact our risk for stroke. And those eight things include healthy nutrition. Particularly, they recommend the Mediterranean diet, which you and I have talked about many times.
Opa.
Regular physical activity, which is terrific. And that's, you know, 75 minutes of vigorous exercise or 150 minutes of moderate exercise, which you could consider walking multiple days a week. Avoiding tobacco, that's a pretty clear one, but it's nice to remind folks that if you are still smoking, cutting down is going to help you decrease your stroke risk. Getting a healthy amount of sleep, that's 7 to 8 hours a night for most people. Controlling your weight, well, that's easier said than done, but it's certainly nice to remember that it's something we can control. And then things like cholesterol, blood pressure, and blood sugar, which to an extent, you know, come back to diet in terms of salt intake, fat intake, and sugar intake. So, you know, that's all really helpful stuff. And I think, you know, if the more we can educate people on the things that they can do, then, you know, drugs and other things can kind of come into the picture after that.
Yeah, all things that we've heard before, but always good to remind us. A caller, Arlene, said she just had hip surgery. She's on antibiotics. Does she have to stay on them for the rest of her life?
Unless there's some very unique reason why they might have been prescribed, some folks are on antibiotics for life for various conditions, and I don't know her specific situation. But in the setting of a hip surgery, generally the antibiotics after surgery do not last for life, no.
Okay, it's just really, it's almost to prevent any kind of infection, I would guess, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Once again, Dr. Dean with the answers, even though he knows nothing about anything. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Director of Emergency Medicine at Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday, Doctor. We'll talk with you soon. Thank you.
Same to you, sir. Thank you.
So, Shawnee, this is going to be right up your alley.
Okay.
Do you remember the TV show for kids, Romper Room?
Sure. Yeah, Miss Beverly.
Miss Beverly.
There was another lady that was on before her.
Miss Carol, Mary Carol.
Yeah.
There was Miss Elizabeth.
Miss Elizabeth, that's the one.
Miss Elizabeth was 1968 to 1973. Andy, this was before your time.
I do remember the Romper Stompers, though.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, those things were great.
The things that went on your shoes?
On your shoes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you walk around and try not to break your leg while you walked around in them?
Mm-hmm.
I remembered, the magic mirror.
Oh, yeah.
She would say who she was seeing, right?
She would hold up at the end of the show, romper, bomper, stomper, boo.
Now, I have a question.
Tell me, true. Magic mirror, tell me today, did all my friends have fun at play? And then she would say who she saw in the magic mirror.
And they held up the mirror. I see Dean.
No, she never saw Dean.
I see Andy. Jack.
Not that it's still.
I see Engineer Bob.
Not that I'm still affected by it today, all these years later, but she never saw. It's much like those little license plates that you can.
Oh, yeah.
That you never saw.
You never see Dean.
You know what? I was in a store somewhere. And I did see a Dean license plate. Yeah. I should have bought it for you.
That was a misprint. But the Romper Room never saw Dean, ever, on the magic mirror. They had, remember you would say the Pledge of Allegiance to start the show? There was the Do Be and the Don't Be.
What were you?
Mostly
a Don't Be. That's why we were out in the hall all the time in fourth grade.
I was misunderstood as a young bee. It was a preschool show, but very impactful. We did some digging over at WGN-TV this week. Guess who we found? Miss Elizabeth.
No.
You did.
We found Miss Elizabeth. She now lives just outside of the Orlando area. And we've been going back and forth with her. I emailed her yesterday. She just sent me an email a few minutes ago. Let me read it to you.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, let me read you the email from Miss Elizabeth. Miss Elizabeth from Romper Room just sent me an email, everybody. I invited her to come on the show. How exciting for me to be with you again on WGN. Hopefully someone will remember me. We'll see you on November 24th. She's going to be here. We're going to do a full hour with Miss Elizabeth from Romper Room on November the 24th.
Awesome.
That's great. You need to recreate the set. You need to bring in kids today.
That's going
to
be on this show. We don't have sets on the show.
We still need
to have kids.
Some authenticity. And okay. I do remember an episode where some kid started crying and had to leave the set.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Beverly said, well, there's mommy over there. And the kid ran off the set. So
I imagine, those were little kids on the Romper Room show.
They were 4 years old, three and four years old.
I imagine there was a little bit of unpredictable behavior, shall we say.
Yes, let's put it that way.
So Miss Elizabeth from WGN's Romper Room will be with us November 20th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And in the email, I said, I'm thrilled to have you on the show, even though you never saw me in the magic mirror. I said that to her. And then she responds back to me this morning. By the way, normally we only saw good little boys and girls.
There you go. Yes. There you go.
Wonder what that says about you.
Yes.
Sunday before Thanksgiving, Miss Elizabeth. How about that? Who's your favorite on Sesame Street, Andy?
I was an Ernie guy.
You were an Ernie guy?
Yeah, I liked Ernie.
I liked Big Bird.
Big Bird.
But I did like Oscar the Grouch also.
Yeah. I think Grover might have been my second favorite.
Boy, I wonder
why. Yeah. Same reason I like Fred Mertz. I like those kind of characters.
Uh-huh.
I like the grumpy, grouchy guy.
Like the two guys in the balcony for the Muppet show,
yes.
Statler and Waldorf.
I like those guys. I did like those guys. But was Kermit Kermit? Was he part of Sesame Street at the beginning?
I'm not sure at the beginning, but yeah, he
came on later.
Definitely on there. Yeah.
He was on.
Piggy wasn't on. Piggy came later.
Much later, yeah. And Mr. Snuffleupagus came later.
Cookie Monster was an original, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Bert, Ernie.
Cookie. Well, Bert and Ernie, right?
What about Grover?
Yeah, I think Grover was part of the originals.
But Super Grover came later.
Super Grover?
Yeah, he became Super Grover.
Super Grover. I knew the Grover, but I didn't know Super Grover.
And Mr. Hooper?
Do you know when the show debuted, it debuted to controversy?
Really?
Because people thought, you know, it was being pitched as an educational show. The kids would learn, and some, you know, traditionalists, I guess, in education thought, how could you possibly teach somebody
when they're having fun?
With puppets and songs and fun, and, you know, there's not the prison camp environment that we grew up in with school.
Well, you know, on a regular basis, when, you know, in the early days, I would recall, you know, they would have a puppet thing and a little skit, maybe. But then they would have people counting, you know, showing numbers, you know, and simple addition, simple attraction. So there's your learning element right there.
Yeah.
Being the world's worst mathematician, I could have learned something.
I think I could have also, but it was that was a little before our time, though, right?
After
our time.
Yeah.
That was my wheelhouse right there.
That was your wheelhouse, right. 69, 70.
Mm-hmm.
But we were just starting to analyze reruns of the Flintstones, I believe, Dean. Right?
I was more interested in Ann-Margrock. And Stoney Curtis.
And Stoney Curtis and Gary Granite.
And watching Fred and Barney smoke Winston cigarettes. Remember that? Do you remember those?
Yes. They
did actual... Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble did commercials for Winston cigarettes. Mm.
It was the sponsor of the show.
They said they were the sponsor of a children's show.
They were the sponsor of a primetime kids show.
A kids show, and Fred and Barney are in the backyard taking a break from cutting the grass, having a smoke.
I don't recall them drinking a Meisterbrau beer with the cigarette.
That would have been the best.
Wouldn't that have been great?
Hey, Fred. I like a Meisterbrau. Hey, Bonnie, come and have a cigarette with me, Bonnie.
It would have been a Meisterrockbrau.
Meisterrockbrau, right. That show is hilarious.
Right, Fred?
That show is absolutely hilarious. but 54 years ago today, believe it or not, that's how long Sesame Street. And I learned while I was doing the research on this for this morning, yes, I do research sometimes. It's called Sesame Street based on the expression open sesame.
Oh.
That the world, when you say open sesame, you know, it opens up a world of imagination and learning. And that's why it's called Sesame Street.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So look what an educational show this is.
It always has been, every Sunday morning.
Yeah, just ask the people at the Peabody Award, they'll tell you. it's another anniversary today, by the way, also. We should acknowledge this anniversary. 1975, Schwani.
Yep, 49 years ago today. Actually, today was the day they left Superior, Wisconsin. They meaning the crew of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And then the sinking was the following day.
Ah. Yeah. The big lake they call Gitchagumi. The lake, it is said, never gives up their dead, Schwani.
That's right.
When the skies of November turn gloomy. So.
If you ever visit Whitefish Bay Yeah, the very tip of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yep.
The Edmund Fitzgerald sank about 16 miles offshore there. There's a memorial and a shipwreck museum that is really very intriguing to see.
Okay. Well, a couple of very different anniversaries today, but both worth pointing out. And when we come back, let's commemorate Veterans Day, which is tomorrow. But what is a veteran? This is a verse that we've shared on the show probably for decades, I think, since
I love this.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're playing this.
We're gonna share this. What is a veteran is coming up next. All right. We continue here on the program. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. And a great commemoration, a great opportunity to remember those who have served, to thank those who have served, family members, friends, people who have given of themselves to help keep America safe and keep America, you know, what it is, our principles, you know, for which they stand. That's why it's always so important. But it's these men and women who put on the uniform that make all the difference. It's got to be over 20 years ago. Somebody sent me, a listener sent me a beautiful verse that was titled, What is a Veteran? We recorded it with music, and every year I like to share it for Veterans Day. Once again, this year, the very poignant, What is a Veteran? What is a veteran? Some veterans bear visible signs of their service. A missing limb, a jagged scar, a certain look in the eye. Others may carry the evidence inside of them, a pin holding a bone together, a piece of shrapnel in the leg, or perhaps another sort of inner steel, the soul's ally forged in the refinery of adversity. Except in parades, however, the men and women who have kept America safe wear no badge or emblem. You can't tell a vet just by looking. So, what is a veteran? They're the cop on the beat who spent 6 months in Saudi Arabia sweating 2 gallons a day to make sure that the armored personnel carriers didn't run out of fuel. They're the barroom loudmouth, dumber than 5 wooden planks, whose overgrown frat boy behavior has outweighed 100 times on the cosmic scales by 4 hours of exquisite bravery near the 38th parallel. He or she is the nurse who fought against futility and went to sleep sobbing every night for 2 solid years in Da Nang. They're a POW who went away one person and came back another, or didn't come back at all. They're the Paris drill instructor who has never seen battle, but has saved countless lives by turning slouchy, no-account rednecks and gang members into Marines, teaching them to watch each other's backs. They're the parade-riding legionnaires who pin on ribbons and medals with a prosthetic hand. They're the career quartermaster who watches the ribbons and medals pass him by. They're one of 3 anonymous heroes in the Tomb of the Unknowns, whose presence at Arlington National Cemetery must forever preserve the memory of all the anonymous heroes whose valor dies unrecognized with them on the battlefield or in the ocean's sunless depth. He's the old guy bagging groceries at the supermarket, palsied now and aggravatingly slow, who helped to liberate a Nazi death camp, who wishes all day long that his wife were still alive to hold him when the nightmares come. They are ordinary yet extraordinary human beings, people who offered some of life's most vital years in the service of their country, who sacrificed ambitions so others would not have to sacrifice theirs. They are soldiers and saviors and swords against the darkness, and are nothing more than the finest, greatest testimony on behalf of the finest, greatest nation ever known. So remember, each time you see someone who has served our country, just lean over and say, thank you. That's all most people need to hear, and in most cases, it'll mean more than any medals that they could have been awarded or were awarded. 2 little words that mean a lot. Thank you. Yeah, powerful, powerful. Every year that I play it, it touches my heart and reminds us of the country in which we live and the freedoms that we enjoy. The you know, this is a verse that was written. It is attributed to a Father Dennis Edward O'Brien, who before joining the Maryknoll Apostolic College was a Marine in World War II. He was ordained in 1953, but wrote these words, and they have become famous all over the world. It's one of the most famous tributes to veterans anywhere. Father Dennis Edward O'Brien, and What is a Veteran? Coming up in our next half hour, we will get into our early version of our Food Time show. Andy, along with Hamp and OB, will be doing their program starting at 11 o'clock leading up to today's Bears and Patriots game. So we'll have an early Food Time coming up in just a few minutes. The Week in Theater, an extremely abbreviated version because we have an extremely abbreviated version of our show today. Hamp and OB and Andy Mays are all coming up at 11 o'clock. But I wanted to congratulate Rick Good of Des Plaines. He won the tickets to see Frozen, the Broadway musical, at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, going on there until January the 19th. I'll see it tonight. I'll give you my review of it tomorrow or Tuesday on Bob Surratt Show. We'll look forward to that. I'll also be reviewing it on WGN-TV Morning News. Speaking of theater, by the way, brought to you this week, by the way, by Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Pericles. Over the past couple of days, I was out in Los Angeles and saw Wicked, the musical, the movie version of Wicked, the musical, with Ariana Grande, with Cynthia Erivo, with Jeff Goldblum, Jonathan Bailey. We interviewed them all. We did our A-list interviews with the entire cast of this spectacular movie. It is really good. I'll give you a full review as we get a little bit closer to the opening date, which is November the 22nd. It is in two parts. Some people have been asking me about that. It is in two parts. People have been asking me where it separates, how they did that. And I don't think it's a spoiler to tell you, if you're familiar with the show, and it's one of the world's most popular stage musicals, so I know a lot of you have already seen it on stage, probably multiple times, because this is really, you know, one for the kids, for sure. But it splits off. The part one goes up until the performance of the song Defying Gravity, which is one of the signature songs of the show. But Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande are spectacular, absolutely spectacular in the show, and we'll be sharing our interviews with them next week here on our Sunday morning radio show. So be listening for that. We've got some good theater and movies that are about to come out for holiday time. It's 10:41. I wanted to get in a little bit of our Food Time show, Chicago radio's only cooking and dining show, and with the weather turning chilly, it is definitely soup season, and that's what I wanted to focus in on today. That's what I'm going to be doing, by the way, on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday on WGN-TV. I'm going to be doing an apple, carrot, and sweet potato soup. Doesn't that sound delicious? Just savory enough. And when you hear the ingredients, you'll hear a little bit more of where some of the savoriness comes in, but also a little bit sweet with the carrot and the apple mixed into the bunch, but nice and creamy, you know, with sweet potatoes, you know, which are so seasonal right now with Thanksgiving right around the corner. We're going to be doing some Thanksgiving recipes in the next couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, but I wanted to get in a couple of soup recipes before we got to that. And I wanted to also open up the phone lines for what is your favorite homemade soup recipe? Do you have one? I hope we all have a good chicken noodle soup recipe because there's nothing better than a nice bowl of chicken noodle soup. I like a lot of noodles. I like wide noodles in them. I don't like them overcooked because they get mushy. But I like a lot of vegetables. I like the wide noodles. I like chunky pieces of delicious chicken in there. So hopefully everybody's got a nice chicken noodle soup recipe. But if you've got a soup recipe, get on the phone line right now. I've got some great prizes for some great recipes. 312-981-7200 if you've got one. But let me tell you about, you know what, let me do this. Let me take a break first. And then when we come back, I'll share the recipe that I'm going to be doing on television this week, the apple carrot and sweet potato soup that I'll be preparing. But in the meantime, you get on the phone lines too and give me your best soup recipe, 312-981-7200. 1047, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, getting in a little mini version of our food time show. We're talking soups this week because that's what I'm going to be preparing on my WGN TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday morning, 9:30, of course, on the WGN TV morning news. I was talking about chicken noodle soup a minute ago, how I like the nice wide noodles in there. The 815 area code says I like the bow tie noodles in my chicken soup. They taste a little different, and they hold up well. They do hold up well. That's a good idea. The tasting, I mean, pretty much all pastas are, you know, they're pretty close. But I could see where it would give it a different texture, maybe a little bit of flavor. Thank you for that suggestion. But let me tell you quickly about this soup that I'm going to be making this week. It's a kind of a sweet and spicy one, one I think that would be a nice stick-to-your-rib soup as the weather is turning chillier, and it's a sweet potato soup. You've had potato soup before, probably, right? It's delicious. But sweet potato soup, into which a little carrot and a little apple is also involved. So what you do is you take about a pound and a half of sweet potatoes, peel them and chop them into smaller pieces so they will cook a little faster. You're going to boil them. You're going to take a pound of carrots, peel and chop those into small pieces, and also just one apple, like a Honeycrisp or a Fuji or something which is a sweet yet also with a little bit of tartness. Granny Smith might be a little too tart for this, but a Honeycrisp would be absolutely perfect. Take that, peel it, and chop it into small pieces. So you're going to take a soup pot, a Dutch oven, something like that, and take a couple of onions, chop those up, and sauté them in butter until they're soft and translucent. You're going to take about a tablespoon of curry powder. This is where the spiciness, a tiny bit of aromatic, really, more than spiciness, comes in. Tablespoon of curry powder goes in, and mix all that together. And then to put the carrots in, the sweet potatoes, you're going to take 8 cups of chicken broth and bring all that to a boil until everything is tender. And then once you do have that nice and tender, the apples go in, a little bit of honey is going to go into this, and then take one of those immersive blenders, the stick blenders, and just slowly puree this whole mixture until it's nice and creamy. Now, you can put it in a regular blender, but you have to let it cool down. You have to leave the hole open on the blender to let the steam out. But if you have an immersive blender, one of those stick blenders, that's going to work perfectly on this. But season all this whole thing with a little salt and pepper and maybe a little bit more honey. And I'll tell you what, this is going to wind up being one of the most delicious soups that you ever had. It's got that wonderful potato creaminess without any cream in it, I might add. But the potato, the carrot, and the apple are the main tastes in this. The curry powder adds a little bit of aromatic spiciness to it, I guess you might say. It's a wonderful soup. I'm going to post the recipe on WGNTV.com/DeanCooks, and I'll show you how to make it. I'm actually going to prepare it on the WGN TV Morning News this coming Wednesday morning at 9:30 on our WGN TV Morning News. So this is Ashley, and Ashley, you've got a soup recipe for us too?
I sure do. It's actually my wife's recipe, but it's absolutely delicious, and it's very, very easy.
Okay, tell me, what's it called?
It's called a sheet pan tomato soup.
Sheet pan tomato soup.
So you take a whole head of garlic and break it up, take all the skins off it, and put it on a sheet pan with a little bit of olive oil, and you sprinkle it with salt and pepper.
I like it already. Roasted garlic. Right. I love it already.
Yeah, this is great. A whole bunch of tomatoes, different varieties, Romas, whatever you've got going.
Okay.
A whole onion, red onion, and some basil leaves, and you put a little more olive oil on that and a little more salt and pepper, and you throw it in the oven and you bake it until they're all soft, and then you put them in an immersion blender and you blend it all together.
Yeah.
And throw it into a crock pot and boil it, and you keep it warm, and then when you serve it, you put a little dash of cream in there.
Yeah.
Heavy, and it is delicious.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds so good. And you know what I love is all the stuff that you put in the sheet pan, all the vegetables, because it not only softens everything, but by roasting it, it intensifies the flavor of all of those vegetables at the same time. And so it's like super, super flavors of all of those things, the tomatoes and the onion and the garlic and become super flavored. Oh, man, does that sound delicious.
Yeah, you should give it a try. It's very, very easy.
Yeah, I am definitely going to give it a try. I really appreciate it. If you'll hang on for a second, I'd love to send you a $50 Tree Time gift card, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dee.
Have a great afternoon. Hang on for 1 second, and Jack Hammer will take care of all of that for you. We've got some soup recipes on our text line coming in. Wow, this is one I've never heard of, but I love this idea, I think. Dean, I make, this is from the 708 area code. Dean, I make a roasted Brussels sprout soup. Now, not everybody loves Brussels sprouts. I happen to absolutely love Brussels sprouts. So, Amanda, you have come to the right guy for this. It says here that I make a roux. I add milk and chicken stock to make it a soup consistency, and then roast the Brussels sprouts in the oven with onions. Sounds like the same thing that the previous caller was just talking about. If you take the vegetables that you're going to put into a soup and you roast them first, it intensifies the flavors. So it's going to do the same thing here with the Brussels sprouts and the onion in the oven. It says when they're brown, I chop them all up and I add them to the cream base that I've made with the milk and the stock and the roux. And it's delicious. Signed, Judy B. Thank you, Judy B. That sounds like a really fantastic recipe. I love that. Here is someone saying, can we use frozen vegetables to roast or saute? I guess you could. Because some of the frozen vegetables are already, pre-processed a little bit. They could get a little mushy, and you're going to lose the effect of intensifying the flavor. I think if I were going with frozen, I would just put them in the way that they are. I don't think I would put them in the oven for very long because, as I say, frozen vegetables are already a little bit processed. Here is somebody who is asking. Let's see what. Oh, here's a question about the tomato soup recipe. What temperature does the gentleman roast his tomatoes for the tomato soup recipe? Well, he didn't say. But I'm going to guess, I'm going to say that if you have vegetables on a sheet pan, I would put them in for like I would do 400 degrees. I would start off at 15 minutes. And if they're not, getting brown around the edges at that point, put them in for like 5 minutes, 5 minute increments until they get browned up a little bit. But I think 400 degrees would do the trick. That would be my guess, as somebody who has roasted vegetables before. Here's somebody asking me for the recipe that I gave, the sweet potato, carrot, and apple soup recipe. Can you tell me the exact type of curry to use? I know there are different kinds. I don't know. I just buy curry powder. I don't get any more involved than that. So I would say probably any curry powder is going to be okay.